My name is Chase Untermyer. I served as a Republican member of the Texas House from Houston in the 1977 and 79 sessions, which I believe was the 65th and 66th legislatures.
Very good. What was your background prior to being involved in politics?
I had been a journalist. I worked for the Houston Chronicle, covering politics for the most part in the early part of the 70s. But my orientation was always toward getting into politics, so that when in 1974, in an astonishing upset, the voters of Harris County elected a Republican as the county judge, I left the Chronicle to go to work for him, and it was from that position that I ran for the legislature.
Okay. Was there any sort of event that sparked the desire, or sparked it when you knew the timing was right to actually go run for it?
I'd been wanting to get involved in politics ever since I was a kid, so thinking about that was paramount. While I was a reporter at the Chronicle, I had thought about and even taken steps toward running for another seat in the legislature, from which I was saved from my own foolishness, I think, by the Chronicle offering me the job of political reporter. So I got to spend that election year, 74, covering politics instead of being destroyed by them. And in 76, a seat opened up. It was the silk stocking seat in Harris County, covering River Oaks, Tanglewood, Eastern Memorial Drive, and some other neighborhoods on the west side of Houston.
Yeah.
That presented the opportunity, a good one, and that's how I got elected.
What is it you think about politics, even from a young age, where your interest was there and wanted to participate, obviously, on the level where you were one of the elected representatives? What is it about politics that makes you say, this is what I'm going to do, as opposed to whatever million other options there are?
I loved history, still do, and if you read a lot of history, and particularly biography, then I think it's a natural impulse to want to be a participant, not just a reader, or even an observer, which I had been as a reporter. That is actually to be in the game. I know that the answer to your question should be that I was driven by a desire to help people, or help the state, or serve the Bill of Rights or the Constitution or something much more noble than that, but I contend that my answer is probably closer to the truth for most people than it is just for me.
How did you get along with folks once you were in your fellow members and leadership?
It was a different sort of legislature. A good spirit of commonality existed because in that era, most everybody was a Democrat. There were only 18 of us Republicans as of the 1977 session. Putting that in context, that's about one-third the number of Democrats in the minority today. Given that sense of comity, the feeling was always one of, well, how to put it, a slightly better behaved fraternity than a university fraternity, in which the ability to get along and to make friends and to be a friend was highly prized. I would like to think that's still the case today, but I do believe it was more the case in the past, especially before the party division became much more paramount. There were divisions. The classic division was between the liberal and the conservative Democrats, in which case we few Republicans naturally bivouacked with the conservatives, which is to say that the speakers of the House of that period, who were conservative Democrats, mostly from rural areas, had Republicans as part of their working team, and as such were not discriminated against, as you might expect, given the small numbers that we represented.
Yeah. Comparing the time when the Democrats ruled the roost, when you were a serving member, and then now, do you see any sort of serious difference between the character of Republicans of those two times?
Definitely a difference in the Republican Party. Republicans have always been conservative, and I would say probably more conservative than conservative Democrats, less on ideological grounds than you might say grounds of practical governance. That is, when I was asked, why be a Republican in Texas? And I'm talking about the period of the 1970s when people would ask that question. And they would ask it in the sense of, why be a Republican? Isn't it enough to be a conservative Democrat? A major difference between the two is that the Democrats, because they had run the state for 100 years, were much more acute to the ways of governing in that era, such as paying attention to what the lobby wanted, and more to the point, what the corporate interests behind the lobby wanted. Republicans were for the free enterprise system, and we were for capitalism and for economic growth, but we were much more wary of letting the government do the work of corporate interests, which is to say, we were less inclined to give special deals and special exemptions to corporate interests, which was what the lobbying game was all about. Democrats were less worried about that. They were perfectly happy to let the instrument of government do work for the private sector rather than, as Republicans felt, that we should let them sink or swim based upon their own merit.
Thinking back to your service, is there anything in particular that you're most proud of or maybe thought was the most interesting while you were in office?
Well, what I might find most interesting wasn't necessarily what I was proud of. But, and in fact, I was not a participant, but I was a close observer. And I'm thinking of the most interesting and in many ways portentous event of the couple of sessions I served was the so-called Killer Bee episode. Which some other people giving oral history may have talked. The Killer Bee episode took place in 1979, and it was an effort by conservative Democrats who did run the state to split off the primary for presidential candidates from the primary for everything else, such as, most importantly, state legislators, but also county commissioners, sheriffs, etc. The reason they wanted to do this is that at the time, in the late 70s, the National Democratic Party was increasingly unpopular in Texas. It was the time of Jimmy Carter, of Teddy Kennedy, of so many other people that made traditional Texas Democrats extremely nervous. And they feared the coming 1980 Republican primary, in which very attractive candidates to their voters, namely Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and John Connally, who had been the arch prince of conservative Democrats but changed parties, in which they would be on the ballot. And the fear on the part of these conservative Democrats would be that if their voters flocked into the Republican Party to support any of those candidates for president, then what would be left over in the Democratic primary would be a lot of liberals who would defeat them and their colleagues and their political allies. By splitting the primaries, they thought they would be able to let people have fun voting for president just so long as the primary for state rep and county commissioner and sheriff could go on as it always had. This was opposed by two groups, neither of which had anywhere close to majority strength. Liberal Democrats, who wanted that to happen, who wanted the conservatives to desert the Democratic primary, and Republicans, who wanted conservatives to desert the Democratic primary, because we knew that the Republican Party would grow only at that time, as eventually was the case. Conservative Democrats flocked over to become Republicans, and also nothing would delight Republicans more than to face liberal Democratic opponents in November. So there was a joint desire on the part of the liberal Democrats and the Republicans to oppose this effort by the conservative Democrats. A couple of interesting things kept that coalition from being a purely legislative effort. One was the brand new Republican governor of Texas, Bill Clements, did not announce his opposition to this bill. As I said, it was in the interest of the Republican Party, paramount, to encourage the conservatives to leave the Democratic primary. Bill Clements, who was the first Republican governor and whose wife, Rita, was a longtime Republican activist, truly a grassroots pioneer. He could have killed the whole episode by just announcing that he would veto a split primary bill if it passed. But he never did, and he never explained it. I have my theory as to why he never did. One is that he had been elected governor very narrowly with the support of conservative Democrats, and he knew this was very important to them, and this would be his payback. My other more suspicion than assertion is that he secretly favored the election of John Connally as president of the United States, and maybe he thought this would help Connally's chances in the Republican primary. Whatever it was, he never issued a veto threat. And in order to stop the bill, a critical mass, I think it was 11 or 12 Democratic liberal senators, vanished from the Capitol, thereby denying the Senate a quorum and stopping not just the split primary bill, but also all legislation for several critical days. They called themselves the Killer Bees. Where they went was somebody's garage apartment only about a mile from the Capitol, but the suspicion was that they were in Mexico or they were in somebody's ranch or they were just somewhere much farther away than a mile. But it worked because so much other legislation really, really needed to be passed. The conservative Democrats, led at that time by the Speaker of the House, Bill Clayton, and the Lieutenant Governor, Bill Hobby, essentially surrendered, and as a result, the 1980 primaries occurred, and those of us who were Republicans or Liberal Democrats saw the future, and it happened. That is, starting as early as the 1980 Democratic primary, liberals began to dominate the vote, defeating conservatives, incumbent legislators, and in the course of the 1980s, the process speeded up to have what we have today, in which the Republican Party is paramount because in a very conservative state, it is the conservative party, and the Democratic rump is run by liberals. They have complete power over the Democratic Party, but it just doesn't win any elections anymore.
Great story. That's great. How about for a last question, then, the standard question that we ask, what, if any, advice would you give to freshman members today?
Advice I have given to freshman members ever since my day is to learn the rules. The rules are a powerful tool, and they're powerful not just in the hands of those people who know how to use the rules, but if one has the reputation of knowing the rules, he or she can have great power just by stepping up to the back microphone, possibly to raise a point of order or to make an inquiry or do some kind of parliamentary trick that might begin to scare people at the front microphone into making a compromise or pulling down an amendment or pulling down a bill. In other words, there are multiple ways a knowledge of the rules can be of value. Very few people, and I do not include myself, incidentally, in that number, very few people actually do learn the rules in to that degree. But those few who have in the past magnified their power even as freshmen.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, yes, well, good. Ask a lot, or tell a lot more.